Are you someone who uses cannabis as part of your lifestyle? If so, I wonder if this resonates with you. You want to enjoy a mellow unwind with some cannabis, but you can't stand that your high is constantly being tainted by physical discomfort from binge eating. You swear this will finally be the night that you don't eat out of control. But once you have the savory snack, you have to go for sweet, then back to savory, and so it goes until the next thing you know, your stomach feels real funky from a mix of lots of different foods. If you wish that there is a way to enjoy the experience of using cannabis without the unwanted side effects of out-of-control eating, you will not want to miss the Cannabis and Intuitive Eating Workshop. On Thursday, April 18th at 3 p.m. Pacific, I'm hosting a workshop to teach you exactly how to navigate intuitive eating while under the influence of cannabis. Get $15 off when you use code PODCAST at checkout. Head to the link in the show notes to learn more and enroll.
I don't feel like I was fully there because I was so preoccupied with thoughts about food and my body.
Welcome to Shoulders Down, a podcast about intuitive eating and living. I'm your host, Leah Kern, and I'm an anti-diet dietitian and certified intuitive eating counselor. In this podcast, you will learn to harness your body's innate wisdom to govern not just how you eat, but also how you live. It is my mission to help you heal your relationship with food and body so you can live your most aligned and fulfilling life. Welcome, and I'm so glad that you're here. Hello and welcome back to Shoulders Down. I am recording this episode. It's like Monday at 6 p.m. right now. And usually I record way in advance, but here we are. I don't know. It happened. There's other episodes technically in the queue, but I wanted to do something special for our 1 year anniversary episode because today marks just about 1 year since we launched Shoulders Down. I remember it like it was yesterday. I remember I had coffee ice cream from Trader Joe's and I didn't realize that it was caffeinated and I could not sleep. Stayed up literally till like 3 or 4 in the morning, which is very late for me. And while I was up, I just like started getting all these ideas. Turns out middle of the night, very creative time for me. And I think I made the album art for the podcast. I came up with the name. Like I remember writing in my journal, like, what should I name it? And I like jotted down a few things and then was like, ding, 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 Shoulders Down. Yep. Love it. So I can't believe it's been a year. If you've been listening for any amount of time, thank you for being here. I love this platform. I love getting to share all the things with you here on the podcast. And if you want to give a birthday gift, or like birthday gift to the podcast, but also like my birthday was a few days ago. So I guess to both of us. If you've been getting value from the podcast over the last year, it would mean so much to me if you took some time to either leave us some stars on iTunes or even better, leave a review. I know I'm big on looking at reviews to decide to do something or not to do it. And so it really helps spread the anti-diet message, which, as you know, if you're listening to this, it's very important and very much needed to drown out the diet culture messages. So I polled the people on Instagram, if you also follow me on Instagram, asking what you'd like to see for a special 1 year anniversary episode. And several people said that they want to hear my story. I am always interviewing people about their stories. And of course, bits and pieces of my story have been interspersed throughout episodes. But several people wrote in saying they want to hear my story. So here we are. I am going to be sharing my story with you on this episode, kind of like from A to Z, though I recognize I don't want to keep you here all day. There's going to be, you know, some skipping around and that kind of thing. But I'm going to try to give you the most comprehensive background on my story with my relationship with food and body, which really informs why I'm so passionate about this work. So I'm really excited to share with you. Before we go any further, just to say up front,
Certainly a trigger warning for this episode, just because I'll be kind of sharing my story in detail. Anytime there's more like explicit detail of dieting behaviors or disordered behaviors, I always want to make sure to let you know up front, just in case that doesn't feel supportive for you, where, given where you're at right now on your journey. This might be an episode you skip or come back to at a later time when you're in a different place on your journey. So with that, I'm just going to dive right in because we have a lot to cover. There's a lot of ground to cover. I did a little outline for myself here so that I like can stay organized. So to start, I would say that like growing up, I certainly didn't have like any like real memories of dieting things for like most of my childhood. And I think that kind of changes maybe in like late middle school, around ages like 11, 12, 13. Is that late middle school? I don't even know. When I think I just started to kind of become more aware of the messages in society. And also, if you listened to last week's episode about my dad and his relationship with food, where I interviewed him, he clearly was on diets for like a lot of my childhood, but somehow like it didn't really start affecting me until much later. And I also don't even necessarily know that my dad being on diets like was the thing that affected me, because when I look back in my story, I see a lot of other avenues where things really took a turn. And so the kind of like backdrop of my childhood was, you know, there were things like in our house, like, you know, this book, I remember this book, Eat This, Not That. I remember my mom watched Dr. Oz. I remember like a food scale entered the house at a certain point. I remember my dad going on a diet called Nutrisystem and like having a bunch of the Nutrisystem foods. Like they like send you prepackaged foods and it's like, oh, okay. Like that, those are things that are happening, but it wasn't really like, I don't know. It didn't like affect my behaviors for most of my childhood again. And the first time I can really remember like thinking about my body, now I want to just say up front, I am someone who exists in a straight size body, which means that I have always been able to go into clothing stores and find clothes that fit me and feel comfortable. And I didn't receive stigmatizing comments from providers, from doctors. I've been able to fit into seats and all these things. So I just want to own that. Despite the fact that I had certain body image struggles throughout the course of my story, I never faced systemic oppression based on my body size. So I just want to own that privilege and also just like share that with you, because this is a podcast and you can't see me. I think it's important to, for you to know that that colors my story, absolutely, having thin privilege throughout my childhood. So I do have one memory of being at the day camp that I grew up with, that I grew up going to, like sitting on the side of the pool next to like my swim buddy at the day camp I grew up going to. If anyone's listening, went to Blue Rail Day Camp, doesn't exist anymore. That's what I'm talking about. The day camp I grew up going to. I remember we had buddies for swim, and I remember sitting on the side of the pool and looking at my buddy, who's just like another girl. Like I was young. I don't remember my age, but like, I don't know. This is probably like maybe third grade, like way younger than middle school. So my body image story, I feel, starts earlier than my relationship with food story. So I remember sitting on the side of the pool and just kind of like looking down at my stomach and noticing that it sort of rolled in a different way and looked to me larger than the person who was my swim buddy, the girl sitting next to me. And I didn't really know why, but I had like sort of like a general sense that like that was a bad thing. And I don't really know exactly where that came from, but I do just kind of remember thinking like, huh, I seem to be like having a larger stomach than this person. And like, I don't think that's good. But again, nothing really happens. I don't really do anything to try to manipulate the size or shape of my body or manipulate my food intake until I would say high school time. So I kind of just wanted to give that backdrop of what it was like growing up. There were certainly some diety things around, and mom and dad, if you're listening, I love you. I know you did the best you can with the information you had. And like so many parents, like they do the best they can with the information they have. And even still, like, you know, some, there can be unintentional harm that is done. And so like, Yeah, we did things like watch The Biggest Loser as a family. Again, we had the book Eat This, Not That, which was like essentially a dieting book. There was a food scale around. Like these kind of things were kind of like percolating in the background of my childhood. And it's hard to say, like, did those things add up to start creating my disordered relationship with food in high school? Like, probably, yeah, probably to some extent. But also there enters other factors in the high school years that, to me, in my perspective, and I don't know that I'll ever really, like, be able to say for sure, feel more significant in the case of my story than my childhood food environment. So high school, the timeline's like a little bit fuzzy for me, but freshman year, I started running track. And I do know that this was related to burning calories. Like my desire to start running track had to do with like kind of a line of thinking that went something like, okay, track will obviously run a lot and that means I'll burn a lot of calories and that's good. So this was kind of a new line of thinking. Like I don't think my brain had gone in that way and like in the territory of like burning calories, that kind of thing, until what I think was early high school, freshman year. And overall, there was some kind of body image stuff freshman year, you know, being in high school and just like, you know, I remember feeling some days just like, ugh, I don't feel attractive, which I think is like so common in high school. And you're just trying to find yourself and your body's also changing. But like, that was kind of it. Like the body image stuff, I don't really remember being so loud. It was just kind of like this overall feeling in the background of like, I don't feel like that cute. And that was kind of the extent of it at that point. Again, the timeline's a little bit fuzzy, but doing my best here. So the summer between freshman and sophomore year, oh wait, just to go back, like I don't think freshman year of high school, I don't think I was like dieting explicitly, but I do think, as I said, I had this awareness around like calories are a thing that should be limited, which by the way, they're not. You need them to live. And I do kind of remember a pattern starting to form of like not eating as much throughout the day because thinking like it was bad to eat more, but then like kind of having like what I would probably call in retrospect binges when getting home from school, you know, like cabinets flying, like, oh my God, I'm so hungry, especially when I introduced track to the mix and needed even more energy, aka calories. And I probably wasn't getting it because of my belief that calories were bad all of a sudden. So from here, the summer between freshman and sophomore year of high school was the last summer at the sleepaway camp I grew up going to. So there was two camps in my life. There was the day camp from earlier and now sleepaway camp, which was a part of my story for many years. But specifically, I think this last summer as a camper is interesting because everyone has like a year of high school under their belts and people are kind of like at the age where like they're really starting to think about the way bodies look, and social media kind of entered the scene more, and comparison, all of these pieces were suddenly like more prevalent. And then throw in the mix living in close quarters with a bunch of other women and being together all day, like seeing people's intake, like breakfast, lunch, dinner were together. Some people would choose to like move their body in an additional way, not just the activities we were doing at camp, but like going on runs or these kinds of things. So suddenly there's like this like noticing of, okay, she does that, I do that, she does this, oh, should I be doing that? Like this kind of just like comparing that starts happening. And I do remember I was doing cross country like the fall of sophomore year. So I was supposed to be like training for preseason and running like even at camp. And I think I did a little bit, but I just overall, it felt like a chore. And I think my relationship with running was starting to get a little problematic at this point. I would say it probably started before this. It started when I chose to do track in high school from this place of wanting to burn calories. But I do think it was starting to kind of like get worse that summer. So fast forward to sophomore year of high school, you know, again, it's kind of fuzzy, but a important chapter is in my sophomore year of high school chapter book is that the spring semester I went to high school in Israel as part of this like study abroad in high school thing, which was an amazing opportunity and also like really hard in so many ways. And I have so many feelings about it today that I'll spare you most of them because that's not the point of this episode. But one thing was that I think there was like 80 high school kids from all over the United States and Canada. And again, living in close quarters, the program was 4 months long. And now people are even older. There was sophomores, juniors, and seniors there. And there was a lot of comparison. There was a lot of seeing what other people were eating and a lot of people from different parts of the country kind of like trading like diet secrets, I guess I'll say. Like I remember there was it was like my first time like really meeting people from like a group of girls my age from California, because I grew up in New Jersey on the East Coast. And I just remember this kind of language around a bunch of the people from California saying things like, oh, you know, like, I guess they were from Southern California, things about like having to be in bathing suits all year round and like what that meant for them and these kind of things. And just suddenly, all of a sudden, like, I think my world had expanded in a way that happens, I think, for a lot of people in college, just meeting people from different walks of life and seeing different ways that people are living. And sometimes that's really inspiring and supportive, but other times it can be really harmful. Like, seeing eating disorders in front of your eyes and, you know, seeing other people kind of like model those things and almost introduce you to them. And so that was really the case on this high school in Israel program. It was hard. I feel looking back, I was young and just super susceptible and wanted to fit in. We were meeting a lot of new people and, you know, with the backdrop of the way that my relationship with food and body was already heading, this program and the environment it created just kind of created this ideal environment for my disordered eating to really thrive. And I would say this program was a turning point. This sophomore year spring semester was a turning point in a bad way in my relationship with food. So my memories of that program, and it's very sad for me to reflect on, my memories of that program, it was 4 months living in another country, and I don't remember a lot of the tourism. I don't remember a lot of the classes I took and the things I learned. I remember obsessing over, oh my God, it's hard to read a nutrition label in Hebrew. I remember thinking, I have to get more laps around this like circle in, because we lived on this kibbutz that like where there was a circle and people would walk around it or run it. And I just remember feeling so gross in my body from binging, because obviously restriction leads to binging. So there you have it. And it's really sad to me because that was a really special time in my life that was completely fogged up by diet culture and by disordered eating. This is one of the, in my view, like most harmful parts of diet culture, of how it really robs you of your life. Like, yes, I was there. Yes, I went to high school in Israel and people are, oh, that's so cool, whatever. It is. Yes. But I don't feel like I was fully there because I was so preoccupied with thoughts about food and my body. So I don't think I have so much more to say about sophomore year. I'm just trying to move it along because like we're not even in college, post-college. I'm just trying to give you a gist here. So junior year of high school, I read a book. I don't know how this book got put on my radar, but I kind of think I like heard the guy speak, the author. I think I heard him speak somewhere. And then I was like, oh my God, I'm like indoctrinated with this guy's belief. I'm young, I'm susceptible. And I bought the book and this sent me down a freaking rabbit hole. Not rabbit hole. I don't know if that's the right thing to say, but it sent me in a spiral that would last several years. So I will say the book I read, just perhaps someone else has read it, or I don't know. I don't think there's harm in saying it because I'm clearly like not recommending it. I'm saying this book really caused me to have a terrible relationship with food. So the book was called Eat to Live, and it's by a guy named Dr. Joel Furham. And the premise of the book boiled down to the most basic form was essentially like, we should just eat to live. Like, we should just simply eat the most nutrient dense foods to optimize our bodies. And that really sounded like, yeah, like that makes sense to me. And so I set on this path of just like having all this like salads and like raw food and like kind of mimicked like a paleo vibe, because this guy was like, you know, essentially recommending staying away from anything processed and added sugar and yada, 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 the whole thing. I felt so much shame because I thought, oh my God, my body's a temple. I should just be craving all the most nutrient-dense foods. Yet I was binging on things like cookies and Nutella and pastries. And I was like, why is this happening? I should just like, you know, I'm pretty sure he said in the book in some way or another, like, oh, you'll get to a point where you stop craving those things. Well, that never happened to me. And spoiler alert, that's probably never going to happen to you either, because our body craves a variety of foods. We need a variety of foods. And if you're just giving yourself like fruits and vegetables and nuts and seeds, you're gonna have the urge to binge on high calorie foods because your body is trying to stay alive and your body is probably not getting enough fuel if you're eating in that like paleo kind of way. And even if you are technically getting enough fuel, your body registers that kind of extreme restriction, and call it what you will, but it is restriction, this like clean eating thing. It registers that as restriction. It registers, oh my God, our survival is being threatened because massive amounts of foods are off limits. So in turn, your body says, our survival is being threatened. We need to drive up the cravings for high calorie foods because that is the way to get the most energy in our body quickly. And your body thinks we are starving, so we need more energy. Anyway, took us down that side hole. But I say all that to say that I felt so much shame because what he said should happen to me in the book was not happening to me. I was still craving other foods besides this like clean eating diet that he had prescribed. And this turned into a situation where like I was bringing like salads with like tofu and raw veggies, and all those things are fine, by the way. Like I still eat those things today, but I also eat other things, and the intention behind it is very different. Back then I thought like, oh, I'm like morally superior because I'm doing this and I'm eating so well and whatever. Today I think, oh, I'm craving a salad. Okay, I'll have that. But it's not morally here nor there. So I would be like bringing these like very like I would call like healthified kind of like just like a nutrient dense meals to lunch at school. And that was kind of like a performance. Like Leah's the healthy one. She eats all these healthy things, whatever. I'm feeling sassy today. It's a good day to film this or to record this because I can like make fun of myself and have a sense of humor about my story. So how I was presenting as this like quote unquote healthy eater, and I was getting a ton of praise for it. But behind closed doors, I couldn't maintain it. I would like, I remember like going downstairs at night and like pretzels and Nutella, pretzels and Nutella, pretzels and Nutella, saying, telling myself last one, last one, last one. Suddenly, oh my God, like half the jar is gone and I feel so ill. And I just didn't understand why I didn't have what I thought was the discipline to not be like this. I just didn't get it. I didn't know why it wasn't working like the guy in the book told me it should work. And unpacking why that book is so problematic and why so many diet books are problematic, but that is a whole other conversation. But it essentially boils down to this oversimplification of what nutrition is actually about. And this was one of these people who made the book about like food is simply fuel, just like eat to live, just simply that's it. And that completely ignores the other reasons why we eat: to be in community, for tradition, for connection, for, I don't know, emotional comfort. Like that's an okay reason to eat. There's so many other reasons why a person might eat. And that book completely ignored that. And it also completely ignores the effects of restriction, because what he was essentially saying was there are certain foods that are good and there are certain foods that aren't as good that you should stay away from. Therefore, they should be restricted. And restriction leads to binging, which is not comfortable. It's not supportive. It doesn't feel good. It doesn't promote peace in your life. And that book and so many books, especially written by doctors who are talking about food, and I'm not saying this is the case with all doctors, but with many that I've seen in my experience, they have tunnel vision for like dietary health, but completely ignore other equally as important parts of health, such as stress levels and mental health and like emotional aspects of health. So that the gaping hole in that book and so many books is just like ignoring the emotional aspect of food and ignoring the relational aspect of food. How one relates to their food is important, because if you have a stressful relationship with food, that stress is not good for your health. That stress and guilt and shame that you feel, which you would feel every day, multiple times a day, because we're constantly faced with eating decisions, that stress is worse for your health than the damn cookie or the damn soda or whatever the sweetened thing is. So that is a little tangent on what my thoughts and feelings are on that book. So, you know, that book sets me down a whole problematic path. And by the way, while we're like talking about this, I'll just say, like, if you haven't heard the term orthorexia, orthorexia is essentially an unhealthy obsession with health. And that's exactly how I'd characterize what I was experiencing. There's other eating disorders that, you know, present a little differently, but essentially at this point in my story, I completely fit the bill for orthorexia. At the time, I didn't know orthorexia was a thing, and I didn't know that, I didn't have like the depth of understanding of how obsessing over health could actually become unhealthy. But of course, looking back all these years later as a registered dietitian, it is very clear to me. So at this time, it's like junior year still, I think we're kind of still in junior year. I think I started getting like much slower at cross country, and this was kind of unexplainable because I thought, oh, I'm eating so healthy. Like, you know, I should be improving and my physical fitness should go up. Spoiler alert, I wasn't eating enough, and running cross country takes a lot of fuel. Also, just like being a person takes a lot of fuel, and I wasn't nourishing myself baseline enough. I'm pretty sure at this point in my story, I was really into like Pinterest and Tumblr, searching things like, you know, Fitspo, like pinning things on. I actually recently found my old Pinterest board. It was like locked because I was kind of embarrassed. I didn't want anyone to see it publicly. And it was like, you know, all these like quote unquote healthy looking, like perfect rainbow bowls and pictures of random people with like perfect abs. And I just remember like looking at that and being like, this is your motivator, like goals, like whatever. Same thing with Tumblr. I look back and I'm just like, oh my God, it's so toxic. God only knows that was adding fuel to the fire. I also remember I read somewhere as like a motivation tactic that you should put your phone password to be like your goal. So you have to like constantly think about it. I don't know where that came from, but I have so many thoughts on that all these years later. But I share this because I remember I wanted to make my goal, my phone password, like my goal weight at the time. And then I was like, well, you know, it's not about weight, Leah. It's about health. And I was really steeped in that from that Eat to Live book. And so someone taught me how to make a phone password that wasn't like a set of numbers, that was like you could use words too. And I remember my phone password was the word healthy and then my goal weight. Because to me, this was signaling like, I want to be X weight, but I want to do it in a healthy way. And I thought that this somehow like made it better and made it like more kosher. All that phone password thing did was made me feel shame every time I typed it in and was not that weight. Because of course, during this time, I'm obsessively weighing myself, you know, doing all the things. I remember growing out of a pair of pants that I really liked. And if anyone remembers the American Apparel Easy Jeans, that's what they were. And I was really upset. And I remember I hung them on the wall. Like I put them on a hanger and then like hung the hanger on like a thumbtack on the wall. Weird and funny to think back. But I did that as like a motivation tactic. And I was like, okay, Leah, like get to be to a point where you can fit back in those pants. Wasn't motivating, was just really depressing every time I looked at the pants on the wall. Like they freaking haunted me. I wrote a piece of content about this a while ago, like the pants that hung on the wall. It's just such a symbol to me of like the sort of dark cloud of shame that fills a person's life when they're in the depths of diet culture. So that's the, like, again, who knows? Was that junior year? Was that senior year of high school? I'm not positive, but moving on to senior year, I really just remember at this point a lot of binging and a lot of depriving myself, which, you know, hey, those two things go together. That makes a lot of sense that I was both depriving myself and binging. Deprivation leads to binging. I was working at Panera Bread. Started working at Panera Bread, I think, junior year. But senior year, I remember a lot of only, like, during my shifts, I would only allow myself to have, like, one thing on the menu as, like, my shift meal. And it was, of course, never what I actually wanted. Like, Panera had so many yummy, like, soups and sandwiches, but those things weren't allowed. I had to get, like, the same salad, and I wouldn't even let myself get, like, bread with it. So it was just so unfulfilling because, like, hello, we need carbs, we need fat. And I was, like, only probably having some, like, fiber, which wasn't very energy dense in the form of a salad. And maybe, like, a little fat if I let myself have oil for the dressing. And so I was just, like, constantly thinking about food during my shift because I was surrounded by it, either on the cash register, taking people's orders and thinking things like, oh my God, that sounds so good. Like, I wish I could get that. Or quite honestly, like, judging people of, like, oh my God, like, that's unhealthy. That's bad. That's so bad for them. Which, if you are in a place, by the way, where you are judging people for their food choices, this is a sign that you are not confident in your own relationship with food. People who have healthy and secure relationships with food and body do not give a shit what other people are eating. It doesn't matter to them. They don't care. If you are judging other people's food choices, like I was back when I was working at Panera, this is a sign that your relationship with food needs healing. It's nothing to feel shame about. It's just an indicator that there's something deeper going on. So there I was, like, playing, like, these mind games with myself the entire shift of, like, maybe I can just, like, dip a crouton in soup and, like, run to the back and eat it. I was so deprived. I was thinking of food so much. I was not present during my shift. I feel like the whole shift I was just, like, scheming on, like, how to, like, eat something in secret. And it really took me out of the experience. Like, I just, again, I wasn't present. Another example of not being present. And sometimes I'd work the closing shift and we'd get to take home pastries. Now, as you can imagine, this poses a big conflict for me because it's like free pastries, as many as you want. And there would be a lot, you guys. Like, they would often donate a bunch to, like, the local church. But sometimes there would be so many that, like, the donation pickup people couldn't even keep up. And they would just, like, give us, like, boxes and boxes as the employees to take home. So I take these home and, like, tell myself, like, you're not going to eat them. Like, just bring them to your family. And of course, I would end up binging on them. Like, just, oh, let me just have a little piece and then another piece and then another piece. And then I've eaten three different pastries and I feel sick and I didn't even, like, sit down and actually enjoy them because the whole time I was just, like, taking a piece and running away, taking a piece and running away. So that Panera period, was, like, junior year, but into senior year, and a lot more of those memories come into play senior year. Also, I would do things like if I wanted the chocolate chip cookie, which the chocolate chip cookies at Panera are so yummy, during my shift or even, like, after my shift, I would be like, no, like, just have a chocolate chip Clif bar. Like, it's more nutrient dense and, you know, we're eating Toledo over here. So that's what you should do. But then, of course, I would have the Clif bar, still feel unsatisfied, eventually say, fuck it, and eat the real cookie. Now, I'm, like, not even enjoying it as much because I'm full because I had the Clif bar on my stomach and also I have the cookie instead of just, like, having the thing that I actually wanted in the first place. So I could tell endless little tidbits and stories like this, but I think you get the picture. One other thing that I'll add here is I did a half marathon my senior year of high school. And this was entirely from a disordered place. I wanted to train for it because, again, I wanted an excuse to run more. Now, like, cross country was over because this was now the fall, the spring, and cross country was a fall sport. And I wanted an excuse to keep the running up. And so I trained for a half marathon. I didn't feel good during it because I had no idea. I wasn't listening to my body's cues. I had no idea how to fuel myself. I was still very much in this binge restrict pattern and I just, like, didn't feel good. I felt sluggish, but I, like, muscled through and kind of forced myself to do this half marathon. that comes into play later, but I just add that in to kind of give you the follow-up on like where my relationship with running was at this point in my story. So going into freshman year of college, I was kind of like, my disordered eating was at a peak. I was very orthorexic, meaning I was super obsessed with the, you know, only eating the healthy things. And I remember going actually up for, I don't know, one of the things where they have you go to the college before it actually starts to like get acquainted with it, accepted students day, I don't know, whatever it was called. But it was summer, I think. It was the summer before, I don't know, at some point, whatever. I went up to Vermont, my parents were driving, and there was this like ice cream place in upstate New York on the way up. And my parents both, we stopped, they both got ice cream. That sounded so nice to me. It would have been lovely, like, oh, getting ice cream with my parents on a nice day on the drive up to break it up. But that was something I didn't let myself do. So I didn't get ice cream. And it's a memory, because I would, over the years of college, when I would drive myself home during the years that I had a car, every time I'd pass this ice cream place, you know, at the point in my story where I was an intuitive eater, I'd always stop for ice cream and just be like kind of smiling to myself at how much I'd changed. Or even if I didn't actually stop to get ice cream, because maybe sometimes I genuinely wasn't craving it, which, by the way, happens as an intuitive eater, I would just smile to myself as I drove by, because that ice cream place was like just a marker of how much things had changed for me. So I add that piece in at this point just to kind of share that. So freshman year was super stressful. I had a really white knuckle grip on my relationship with food. I did this hiking orientation program. So the week before freshman year started, UVM, where I went to school, offered this like freshman orientation thing, which was called Trek. And I signed up for the backpacking one, the hiking one, which was like a week in the woods on a backpacking trip with like, it was me and seven other incoming freshmen and two upperclassmen who were the like leaders of the hike. And we were hiking a lot, like maybe like 7, 8, 9, 10 miles a day. And we were eating processed foods because it's very difficult to take fresh fruits and vegetables into the woods. They're very heavy. They don't last very long. And so processed foods are totally your friend on hiking trips. But at the time, this freaked me out. I was really worried. Oh my God, I'm not eating salad for a week. What's going to happen? Again, a lot of that eat to live propaganda percolating in my head, fear mongering ultimately. And I felt shitty about myself on this trip. Another like full circle moment. So, there was this one day on the hiking, on that freshman orientation hiking trip called Trek, where we stopped at this like beautiful like lake on the trail, and it was super hot August day. Everyone was swimming, and a bunch of people we just met, like it was all like bonding a lot. We're a few days in, and I again barely remember like the memories and the, like the way that the air smelled and the way that the trees looked and all the nature things from that moment. But what I do remember is looking down at my stomach and feeling so upset. I was just in like a sports bra and shorts and we jumped in the water, and I just was comparing to the other girls in my group, and I felt yucky in my body. I did not like the way my body looked, and I really felt upset about this, which is valid. And also my heart breaks for that version of myself, because I just didn't have so many of the tools and so much of the understanding and insight about bodies that I do today. And so the reason I say that there's a full circle moment here is because that was my freshman year of college. 5 or 6 years later, maybe 6 years later, one of my dear friends, B, and I, we went back to that trail. We actually met on that trip along with another close friend. And many years later, I think it was like 6 years later, we went back and did the entire trail. So on that freshman orientation trip, we just did like, I think like a 50 mile section or something. And 6 years later, we went back and we're like, let's do the whole thing, which was like a 270 mile, 1 month long situation. And when we got to the part of the trail that we had been on together 6 years prior during that freshman orientation trip, I had a massive moment with myself. I just remember standing there looking out to this lake and thinking, oh my God, like you did it. Like you changed so much. You are such a different person than you were when you were an incoming freshman and feeling so much shame about your body and so much stress about food. I was just like so emotional because so much had changed for me and I felt so much more peace. And it wasn't just my relationship with food that changed. Like obviously 6 years, especially in your like early 20s, like so like you're changing in so many ways, but it was such a clear moment for me of, you know, you did it. Like you really unlocked this new existence, this new reality, this different reality where food and body is so peaceful, it's so easy and natural and intuitive. And I don't know that I ever thought that that was possible at the time where I was first at that lake as an incoming freshman on that orientation trip. So freshman year, the first semester is really marked by a ton of restriction and binging still. There was this, I would call it rock bottom moment where I had 3 pints of Ben and Jerry's in my like mini fridge in my dorm because where I went to college was close to the Ben and Jerry's factory. And I like did something through a club where I volunteered for the day at the Ben and Jerry's factory. And our payment was three free pints. So again, just like the Panera pastry situation, this is a situation where typically I wouldn't allow it into my possession. But, you know, with the Panera pastries, it's like, oh, it's free. I'll give them to my parents or whatever. And with the Ben and Jerry's, it's like, oh, it's free. Maybe my roommates want them or maybe I'll just have a little. So, you know, these kind of typically unacceptable things, like I sometimes would like kind of make exceptions. And when I did, as you might be able to predict at this point in the story, it was not good for me in terms of I would go totally berserk. I remember I don't remember how it started, but like I had the three pints in my room and they were completely taking over my brain space. I'm like trying to do homework or even like relax and watch Netflix. And I just could not stop thinking like there are three pints of Ben and Jerry's in this room. Like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. Until of course, finally, like I take one out and it's like Ben and Jerry's has the big chunks. And it was like, oh, let me just like pull out one of these pieces of cookie dough. Oh, let me just pull out another. Oh, let me just another. I swear to you, maybe you've heard me tell, I've like written about this story in other forms of my content. I literally eventually got to a point where my fingers felt numb, like perhaps they actually had frostbite because I was eating ice cream with my fingers, telling myself on some level that, oh, like calories don't count if you're not using a spoon. So I think I like make it to the bottom of the pint, probably. I don't remember the details. I just remember feeling really uncomfortable in my body. And this was like a super rock bottom moment because I felt so much shame. And the only thing I knew to do in my story to rid myself of the shame was to run. That's how it went in my story, as you could probably see by now. I remember taking myself on a run, and you can only imagine going on a run after eating an entire pint of ice cream. That's not good. It didn't feel good. I felt sick. I felt really uncomfortable. And I just remember feeling so upset and disappointed with myself of like, how is this still happening? It had been years now. And I just felt horrible. And so I didn't know what to do. I didn't like know about, oh, let me like look up intuitive eating and learn how to heal my relationship with food. This was not on my radar. And by the way, I'm already a dietetics major. So I go to college and say, I'm going to major in nutrition and dietetics, like the major is called like dietetics, nutrition, food science, not from a place of being genuinely passionate about it, but from a completely disordered place, which if you're a dietitian and you're listening, you might be able to resonate because so many people end up in the profession from a disordered place. And for me, that looked like I restrict food so much that I'm literally obsessed with it. I want to go learn it and study it for 4 years. And it also looked like I want to like perfect my eating. Let me just like learn all of the science and all there is to know about nutrition. And then I'll solve like, and then I'll finally like get it and I'll be like a perfect eater. And so I'm already a nutrition major. So all of this that's going on that I've described like in this like first semester of freshman year, the backdrop is I'm a nutrition major. I don't think I really had like nutrition-y classes first semester of freshman year. It was like a ton of prereqs. But second semester of freshman year, or like maybe this was first semester, but I don't really remember. At some point, kind of towards the end of my freshman year, I want to say, in one of my classes, it was called Survey of the Field, which was a class designed for freshmen dietetics majors to see like the possibilities in the field of like, oh, you could do this as a dietitian or this or that. If you didn't know, there's a lot of different avenues you can take as a dietitian. You could like be in food service, you could be in public health, you could be in private practice, you could be in clinical. So that was a class we had. And in this class, I remember the day so vividly because it was a life-changing day for me. A woman came into the class and she shared what she does as a dietitian. This was part of the class. Every once a week, we had a different dietitian who worked in a different aspect or of the field come in and share about their work. And she got up in front of our class. She had like a PowerPoint presentation, introducing herself, walking us through what she does. She got up in front of the class and said, "Hi. Her name was Lauren, I remember. I'm Lauren. I'm an intuitive eating dietitian." I had never heard those words in that order before in my life, but I knew in my bones in that moment, I need to know more about this. What is that? I need to know more about this. So she gives her whole thing and I'm so intrigued. And at the end, she kind of says, you know, if you want to learn more, read intuitive eating. I leave that class and on my way back to my dorm, I stop in the library at UVM. And I ask them if they have the book Intuitive Eating. I've never like asked for a book ever before in my life. Like this is like not comfortable for me, but I'm like, I need this book and I need it immediately. They tell me no, but they can order it. So they order it. I come back a few days later, get my hands on the book, devour it. And I'm not like at this point in my story, I'm not like a big reader. So that was like really notable and kind of like rare for me. I remember sitting on the top bunk of my forced triple, my teeny little room with me and two other human beings were living in for a whole year, completely just captivated by this book. Every single word, I was like, yes, yes, yes. It all felt so true. I felt so validated. And I felt for the first time in my life that there was a solution to the problem I was experiencing and that I wasn't alone. This obviously starts a huge changing wind in my story. So I start incorporating what I'm learning from the book into my life. And I want to say I saw changes like fairly, this part is so fuzzy. And it's really funny because it's like I do this work professionally now. And like I wish I could remember more about the beginning parts of my story, but I don't really. I just remember that the summer between freshman year of college and sophomore year of college, I remember really allowing myself to have whatever I wanted for the first time in my life. I definitely remember some weight gain that was unsettling, but I don't remember being too upset because I was just feeling so much more peace and so much less stress and the binging was starting to go away. And so I was like, whatever, if I'm going to gain weight, okay, it's okay. I mean, I think it was, maybe I'm remembering it with rose-colored lenses. Maybe it was harder for me in the moment, but I remember just the peace and freedom and the lack of stress I was feeling were enough to propel me forward through the discomfort about my body changing. Sophomore year of college, this is like, at this point, I would say like I entered into sophomore year of college as an intuitive eater. A lot of work happened over the summer. I never worked with anyone professionally. And I think everyone's different. Some people really just could read the book and implement and that's all they need. I think some people really do need like a one-on-one situation. Other people could do fine with the book and some podcasts and maybe some Instagram content. But I think I maybe started following a few Instagram accounts at that point, but I definitely wasn't as like immersed in the social media aspect of it at that point. So sophomore year, enter as a intuitive eater. I really, for the most part, binging was out of my life. I was feeling way more in control. At this point, my biggest struggle was eating while high. Cannabis was a huge part of my college experience. I went to UVM, and specifically freshman sophomore year was a really big part of my college experience. And so at this point, I was mostly feeling in control and not binging when sober. But when getting high, this is when the binges would happen, which is really, really normal. This is like a niche that I'm very passionate about now. If you resonate with that, or if you're interested in learning how to stop binging while high, I have an episode on this called Cannabis and Intuitive Eating, Navigating High Munchies. I think that's what it's called. And it's one of our most downloaded episodes, I think, because it is so value packed, and it's also something not a lot of people are talking about. So you can check that out if that's interesting to you. So, I remember when I would feel out of control while high, like I would experience some like taking some of my roommate's food and like having some guilt about that, because there was like, I still had some of like the out of controlness. But that's like the main thing I remember as like a problem sophomore year, which is, again, really normal. I'm not going to like coach myself now, like my past self, but I just want you to know, if you're listening and you feel like you've done a lot of work on your relationship with food, but you still struggle when under the influence, it's incredibly normal. I just remember eating what I actually wanted sophomore year, like going to the little market on campus, the Redstone Market, getting myself like a mac and cheese, like frozen mac and cheese and ginger ale for dinner, and being like, yeah, this is good. I like the savory. I like the sweet. And not having this feeling of like, I shouldn't be doing this. I should be getting a salad. And just having so much more of this trust of like, I want mac and cheese and ginger ale right now. Tomorrow I might want a salad. Like, I trust my body to take care of it. I also want to say that I took a lot of space from formal movement during this time. So to kind of follow the thread of my relationship with running, I remember sophomore year of college taking a lot of space with my relationship with running, meaning I didn't really engage in much formal movement at all, which is a really normal part of healing your relationship with exercise. In terms of healing your relationship with your body, I like to compare it to, you know, if a friend was really mean to you, you might need some space from them. In the same way, if you've been burned by your relationship with exercise, it's really normal to need some space before you can heal. So sophomore year, okay, yeah, we're making it through a little faster now because there's kind of less to report. But junior year of college, I was absolutely an intuitive eater by this point. There's not much to write home about. You know, the high binging had pretty much gone away by this point. I was experiencing a lot of anxiety junior year. And for the first time, I experienced not being able to eat because of anxiety. Whereas when I was struggling with my relationship with food, historically, anxiety or stress would cause me to eat. I would turn to food to soothe those feelings. And this was an interesting shift where suddenly food didn't feel appetizing when I was anxious, which is something I see as kind of a hallmark of a sign of an intuitive eater, which is not a good thing. It's not like, oh, you should be looking to lose your appetite when you get anxious. It's just something in my professional experience I've seen shift in folks on their journeys. So this was one of the first times where I really felt like, wow, like having an appetite is good. Like, it means that I'm healthy and mentally healthy. And it was really scary for me to experience some bigger anxiety and to feel like, oh my God, I lost my appetite. Like, it really feels hard to eat right now. So that was kind of earth shattering for me. But yeah, overall, working through the anxiety and therapy and that kind of thing, I really felt true food freedom for the first time in my adult life. I think I did sophomore year too, but junior year living off campus and making our own food, like I really was getting to experience intuitive eating in its like full form. And that was really exciting. I also started to get back into movement. In the spring of junior year, I trained for another half marathon from a really, really different place. My intention had nothing to do with manipulating the size or shape of my body, and everything to do with me realizing like running actually was really helpful for my anxiety. And I loved getting outside and having a reason to get outside. And I loved being with myself and listening to my music. And I was also in kind of like a problematic relationship during this time. And running was a way for me to connect back to myself after it felt that I really had lost myself in that relationship. So, I share that again to kind of follow the thread with my relationship with running through healing my relationship with food. My relationship with running changed. So after taking like a solid year space from it, I kind of naturally felt called to go back. It's just that my intention looked so different than it was during that first half marathon and during those high school years where running was so about burning calories. Okay, so senior year of college, there's really nothing notable. I was just chilling, living my life as an intuitive eater. One notable thing is that I think I stopped being a vegetarian at some point in this year. I had been a vegetarian for several years. I think it started in high school. And, I don't even really know why. It was just kind of like, this is good. This is healthy. And I just kind of kept with it for so long and like never really even reevaluated if it actually felt good for me. It just kind of felt like, just throw another restriction on here. Eventually I was like, wait, like meat can be really delicious and I want to be able to go places and try their like signature dish. And if it includes meat, I don't want to be missing out on that. And I want to be able to accept food when loved ones make food and sometimes it has meat. And so I kind of uncovered that senior year. At this point I end up getting into my dietetic internship, which is a necessary step in order to become a registered dietitian. So right after senior year of college, I moved to Brooklyn in the city, New York City, to start my dietetic internship, which at this point I knew that intuitive eating was a passion of mine. And I kind of just wanted to like get through my dietetic internship rotations. We did clinical, we did food service, we did like public health, all the different rotations, because I knew I wanted to make it through so I could start my own practice and do intuitive eating work with clients. And so that's what I did. Like, I feel like, oh my God, the story kind of ends there. So, the years following my internship, just been smooth sailing as an intuitive eater, and now have the absolute gift of getting to share this work with the world through my business and getting to witness clients have life-changing transformations as a product of implementing this work into their lives. So I guess one thing I'll add at this point is kind of like my relationship with my body in kind of these later years. So though my relationship with food has been very, very solid for many years, I would say like one of the lingering challenges for me is my relationship with my body. Now it has gotten so much better, but I am by no means perfect. I don't feel super grateful and like loving and accepting of my body every single day. I go in seasons where I feel like, more accepting of it, and other times where I'm like, I just don't like the way I look today. And I have learned that that's normal and that will happen. And that's part of being a human. But what has changed is I just don't identify as strongly with my body, meaning I don't see my physical body as an indicator of my worth. So on days where like, I don't like the way my hair dried, or I'm not wearing a cute outfit, or I'm having a bad body image day, and I feel like I'm fussing over a certain body part looking too large, or whatever the thing of the day is, or even acne, these kind of things, I used to feel like, oh my God, like this is the end of the world. And now I feel like, you know, it's a bummer. It's certainly a bummer. And I'm not going to toxic positivity my way out of it. I'm going to allow myself to feel like, yeah, you don't, you're feeling fussy about your looks right now. You don't like it. That's okay. And your looks are not indicative of your worth as a human being. Your physical appearance, your physical body is merely a vessel to carry your soul and spirit and to allow you to experience the world. And this is something that I've really been working on embodying, and it challenges me sometimes. Sometimes, you know, I see clients virtually for a living, and sometimes I'm on Zoom all day and I don't like the way I look for whatever reason. And I really try to remind myself, the way you look has no impact on your ability to effectively support, coach, and guide the human being in front of you. They don't care. They do not care how you look. And if they do, they're probably not a client who I would work with. You know, like it's just not the same values. If someone wouldn't choose me as a dietitian because the way I look, they don't care how you look. You can still share your gift with the world, which I really do see intuitive eating coaching as a gift that I have, regardless of how your physical appearance is. And so moving away from seeing my body as the most important thing about me, my physical appearance is the most important thing about me, and moving into challenging myself, even on days when I don't like my appearance, to see myself as still worthy because of the things contained inside of this container that is my body, which is my spirit, my soul, my gifts, my magic, whatever you want to call it. That has been one of the most life-changing transformations, and I'm not all there every day. Sometimes it's much easier said than done, and I'm just like, you know, sitting in the suck of not liking something about my physical appearance. A client asked me actually last week, like, do you just never like eat past comfortable fullness? Like, is that just like what intuitive eating, like in a really advanced form, is like? And I said to her, Hell no. Like, I, just because I have this very peaceful relationship with food and what I would consider extremely intuitive relationship with food in my body, doesn't mean that I never eat past comfortable fullness. What I share with this client and what I'll share with you right now is that the magnitude and the frequency of episodes of eating past comfortable fullness at this stage in the journey become increasingly less frequent, and the magnitude becomes less. So when there is an episode of eating past comfortable fullness, it gives me pause and it makes me think, you know, no judging. There's no reason to judge it, but it just makes me think, huh, this is interesting. This doesn't happen a lot anymore. I wonder why this is happening right now. So an example I love to share is maybe like 2 years ago at this point. I'm putting on chapstick as I'm speaking to you. Like, maybe it's changing my voice. Hopefully it's not. Maybe like 2 years ago, I met up with a friend who I went to college with, who I hadn't seen in a while, and we got dinner, and I left the meal and I felt physically uncomfortable from eating past the point of fullness, of comfortable fullness. And I remember sitting on the subway home thinking to myself, like, huh, interesting, like this doesn't happen a lot anymore. Like, I wonder why it happened today. And upon some reflection, what I came to realize which tends to make sense. I felt a lack of connection with this person, and that felt really hard. And so the reason I was eating was to fill the void of this lack of connection, to fill this unmet need of connection, and to also cope with the sadness of like, this friendship isn't what it used to be, and that feels hard and sad. And so it was easier for me to continue eating than it was to sit in those feelings. And that is perfectly okay. There is nothing wrong with that. There is no failure with intuitive eating. There is only feedback. And in this case, the feedback that I got from upon reflecting on the experience was, okay, like, yeah, I was feeling a lack of connection and my body was attempting to get that need met through food. And that's why I ended up in this position of eating past comfortable fullness. Okay. Noted, giving myself compassion, not berating myself, and moving forward with that information. So I share that example with you to say, I'm not sitting here as this like perfectly healed person who has amazing body image and never eats past comfortable fullness or any of these things. No, I'm just a person like you. I just have entered into a part of this work of my intuitive eating journey where the magnitude and the frequency of binges is so much less than it once was. And when it does come up, I learn from it. I have the tools and questions to ask myself, you know, what's going on? What am I really needing? Is there an unmet need? All of these things. And the same goes for body image. Every once in a while, I'll start feeling bad thoughts about my body, and I have the tools to make the amount of suffering much less than it once was. So I shared this on Instagram a few months ago. I was looking for new jeans, and I went to the store and I was trying on jeans, and the jeans that felt comfortable were two to three sizes bigger than my regular size. And I initially had this kind of freak out in the dressing room that was like, oh no, what does this mean? I've gained weight. What does that mean? Yada, 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 yada. So immediately I'm able to notice, Leah, it's okay that you feel these feelings, that, you know, we live in a culture where your pant size getting bigger is demonized, even though it shouldn't be. This is the culture we live in. It is so valid to feel these feelings. And what's so bad about being a bigger pant size? Like, it doesn't mean anything about you or your worth, going back to that whole thing of like, I'm a vessel, I'm a container. And even if I'm a bigger pant size, I'm still Leah. I'm still me. I still have the gifts inside of me that make me me. And so I was able to take myself through a set of internal dialogues and tools to make that amount of time that I was suffering and spiraling so much smaller. Because back in the day, let me tell you, if I went to the dressing room and I was two or three pant sizes bigger, that would have sent me into a months of restricting and binging and, you know, abusing exercise and all of that stuff. So yeah, it still happens. But the amount of time that I experience the suffering and the spiraling is so much less than it used to be. I've been talking for a while. I could talk so much more. What I'll leave you with, am I ready to leave? Like, is there so much there's so much I could say. I think I'll leave you with this. So intuitive eating is a journey. And over the years, as you continue on your journey, you will continue uncovering sneaky and hidden forms of dieting and food rules. So even though I've considered myself an intuitive eater for like 8 years, I would say over the last like 3-4 years, I continue to uncover some really, 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 really sneaky and subtle rules. So I just wanted to give you a few examples. I have a little list here. I would say maybe like 2 years ago, I uncovered this rule that said, you know, if you're going to have salad, you should have spinach because it's more nutrient dense than romaine. And then I think I like had a romaine salad, like a friend's mom made a salad with chopped romaine. I was like, so fresh. And like, I love like the crunch of it. And it's just like nice. And I realized, what are you doing? Like, you could have romaine salads too. And that was just like, oh, I've just been like on autopilot having the spinach salads, because back in diet culture days, I thought that that was like the better thing to do. Some other ways I see this show up a lot is people who just like default eating whole wheat everything, when really they might actually want like the white bread or pasta or whatever, but they're kind of unconsciously operating from old diet rules. A big one for me that I uncovered maybe sometime in the last few years as well was this whole like no sugar sweetened drinks. For so long I held on to that. And then it's like, well, guess what? I like a soda with certain meals, or I like juice with certain things. Like, I like sugar sweetened drinks with some things, and that's okay. And again, autopilot, I would just like always go for water or like green tea or like whatever, the like calorie free option, without even actually considering like, wait, this is something I can have access to now that I have no rules. So if you feel like you're in a more kind of like later stage of your intuitive eating journey, I would lovingly invite you to continue checking in, because rules can be so sneaky and you can, you know, continue uncovering them even years into your journey. And that's not a bad thing. It doesn't mean you're doing anything wrong. It just means you're human and you are continuing on the path, and more things are kind of presenting themselves to you as you continue to stay open to the work. A mentor of mine says that like this work is not, there's no destination. She calls it like a dig. She says it's an archaeological dig. And
we're continuing to just go deeper and deeper and uncover different things. But it's never like, and now I've arrived and it's over. It's like, nope, we're just always kind of journeying on this dig, which I like. So there you have it, folks. That's my story. If there's anything you have questions on, or if I like have some kind of gap in the story, feel free to message me. You know, my Instagram is linked in the show notes. You can email me and I'd be happy to expand or answer any questions. I hope that was supportive for you to hear. And also, if you've made it this far, I want to share, I have some spots open currently in my one-to-one coaching program. So if my story resonated and you're like, I want to experience the peace that you experienced, I would absolutely love to invite you to apply to my one-to-one coaching program, The Embodied Method. The link to apply is going to be in my show notes, or you can also just go to leahkernrg.com/apply. This program, The Embodied Method, takes everything I've learned from my professional experience as an intuitive eating dietitian and my personal experience as someone who struggled with disordered eating, as you've just heard in my story, and it combines it into my signature proven process, The Embodied Method. This is all of the tools and support and guidance that I wish I had on my own journey, because if I did, I would not have struggled for as long as I did. I would have made it through the other side in a much shorter time. But I'm grateful. I wouldn't change anything. I created this program because I don't want you to have to spin your wheels in diet culture for any longer than you need to be. So the link to apply is in the show notes. I would absolutely love to meet you on a discovery call to hear more about your story. So after you apply, we'll schedule that free discovery call and see if the program is the right fit for you. If it's not, I will share that with you. Honestly, I really value integrity and see no reason to push you into something that isn't right for you. Thank you for listening to my story. And again, as I said in the beginning of the episode, this is our 1 year Shoulders Down podcast anniversary. So if the content has been resonating with you, if it's been supportive for you, it would mean so much if you would leave us a rating or review and or share this podcast, share any episodes that really resonate with you with friends, family, loved ones, anyone who you think could benefit from hearing the anti-diet message so that we can continue spreading the word. All right. I will see you next week. If you enjoyed this episode, if it inspired you, if you learned something, it would mean so much to me if you rated it and reviewed it. And if you feel called to, share it with someone who it might resonate with. You can find me on Instagram at leahkern.rg. You can also join my weekly newsletter by visiting leahkernrg.com. And I'll see you next week.